Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon.
And I'm Margaret Katz-Kann. And we are excited to have as our guest today, Amy Mauser. And she is the mouse, the quote mouse in Team Cat and Mouse, which is a partnership firm that creates highly effective funds development teams through customized training and ongoing coaching. Amy has spent almost two decades building and leading fundraising teams with nonprofits after a brief but educational career in law. Amy, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Michelle and Margaret.
Yeah. Amy, you wrote such a fun blog about an experience you had in middle school where you needed to...
High school. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you learned a lot about fundraising, unbeknownst to you.
Yes. We like to say that most people end up as fundraisers the usual way, which is by accident. And I think that while in the end, my path feels a little accidental, it actually was paved from the beginning.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, I know when the idea of a tiara was first dangled in front of you, you were a hard no thank you. And then something shifted. You just weren't a tiara kind of a girl. But something shifted. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was?
Absolutely. I was invited to participate in the Queen of Hearts competition and ball. And it was actually called a ball in Central New Jersey. And this was a fundraiser for the American Heart Association. I think the committee member who approached me was a friend of my parents, came at me with the appeal of the party on the tiara. But when she switched to the, this will look good on your college application, she was really speaking a better language for me, since at the time my love language was get into college and succeed. So I was off and running. I have a different appreciation for that now, having gone through the college application process with my own children, but at the time it made perfect sense, and I jumped right in for the chance to have an out-of-school leadership service extracurricular on my resume.
Well, tell us how that helped spark your love for fundraising and the work that you do today.
Well, it was a very interesting combination of both learning about the process of fundraising, the tactics behind it, which is really where much of my work is focused now with Team Cat and Mouse, and learning the reason that people are engaged in nonprofits, being able to talk about a mission and the impact. And while I can't recite any of the statistics that were said to me by the Heart Association then, I know that being able to share that story was powerful. And being able to generate a sincere response from people, not based on me, but based on the story I was telling them, was powerful. Yeah. and led to the success in fundraising.
Amy, what I love, something that you're talking about. I was speaking yesterday with, actually it's a friend of my son's who's raising money for a cancer run, and she's a cancer survivor. So, you know, that's her lead, right? But there are so many people who work in fundraising where you don't have this, you know, I mean, in high school, you probably hadn't had a lot of issues with your heart. Well, maybe, you know, love issues, but not the kind that the American Heart Association is working on. So how is it that we as fundraisers can sort of learn to connect with, you know, with the message, even if it isn't a personal story for us?
I think it's really important to find a piece of the story that that speaks to you. So whether it's by taking a piece of one of your agency or organization's, you know, one of those stories and making it your own, but I think finding a way as a fundraiser to tell the organization's story from your own perspective and your own heart is really compelling. So I've found in my work, and I've worked across a lot of kinds of organizations, that as a fundraiser, as a staff person, it was really important to do the work one way or the other. So whether it was going on a fire response call with the American Red Cross, or meeting with professors and students and deans when I was at a large university, or sitting in on a patient support group when I was with the Parkinson's Foundation, all of these are a way to see the story. And I think sometimes as fundraisers and as fundraising leadership, we miss the importance of feeding our board and our leadership those stories as well. So,
yeah, stories are so important to help people get connected with the mission and understand how it's relevant for them. I mean, Margaret and I do a lot of work around storytelling with fundraisers. And as a former photojournalist myself, you know, it was my job to tell the stories of nonprofits out there. And what you're speaking to, Amy, is so true. It's like for people to really be in touch with what feels authentic to them as they're telling the story, as they're fundraising, as they're doing their work, is important. It's not about making up the story or trying to get attached to part of what the cause is that they can't relate to, but find that piece of you that is truly important and speak from the heart, because that is so important.
It's so important. And to understand as a fundraiser that there are going to be different parts of your mission and story that move different donors. And so, you know, I usually go into a donor meeting, you know, back in the day when we could do them face to face and we were having meaningful, you know, in-person connections with three or four stories. You know, here are some of the things we do. And wait and look for which one of those things like made the person's eyes sparkle, which piece made them ask the next question. Because I think, I mean, and this goes to sort of a tactical challenge I have with fundraising, and that's, you know, sort of the package of the day. You know, today we're going to talk about, you know, this need. But if there's a donor who really wants to fund, who it turns out is far more interested in that need, we need to bring that to them. And so being able to tell the whole story of your mission and find which pieces of it, and even the most focused of missions has many pieces to it and many ways to you know, slice it up. And so, you know, bringing all of those to the table with a donor can be really enlightening.
Yeah, and Amy, so impactful. Go ahead, Margaret.
Yeah, Amy, you're sort of naming this super cool coaching skill that we talk about a lot, both with our fundraising leaders and all leaders, which is kind of this capacity to read space, right? It's listening, not just to what the words that your donor is saying, but also listening for what they're not saying or what their body language is doing. Or, you know, as you said, like looking for the sparkle in their eyes. How do you help your team members, you know, learn, like, how did you figure out that you had this superpower? And how do you help other people? I spend a lot of time in my coaching also talking about that. So I'm curious about your perspective.
Well, I think that, and this is, you know, some of the challenge between the overlay between fundraising and sales. And so when you recognize that you're not selling one product, but you're selling an opportunity to be engaged in a whole mission, that helps. And I think that reducing our reliance on flyers and marketing material forces us to have conversations. And so there's that. I mean, at the higher level, I think it's important when I work with boards, for example, to work with board members to find their own story to tell. Because once they're telling their own story, whether it's the piece of the mission that they saw or the piece of the mission that they are most interested in helping with, that's the story that they then share. And I'm not in this case talking about board members as donors, but board members as part of your fundraising team, because when they're committed to a piece of the story, they tell it. So I think that listening and enabling your fundraising team to take the time to listen to their donors and the people that they're working with.
Yeah,
and it's hard.
It is. Listening can be a real challenging skill because we have to just zip it, like stop speaking, and actually listen and tune into what I hear you saying, Amy, that you've got this gift of an intuition of seeing that sparkle in their eyes if they're talking about a certain thing. That's something that's very important to them. And that's something you can say, tell me more about that. What's important about that for you? And how does that relate to this nonprofit and you're wanting to be involved in it? Or, you know, it's really finding that very personal, very heartfelt connection that they may have.
And I think another reason it's hard is because it slows down the process.
Yes, it does.
If you go into a donor meeting and you know I'm selling them a $25,000 opportunity to sponsor X, and I've come in and I've decided that what I need to ask them for is this much money to name this project, let's say, then you're less likely to hear them when they say, what about that project? And to teach your team as a fundraising leader, to have your team understand that when they come home or come back to the office without that $25,000 gift, because they've made a plan to talk to them about something else the next time, that makes it hard. Because of course, we're all working with budgets and timelines and, you know, pressure from above. So there's that. And I think that's one piece of the being nimble on an individual level that we need to train and that I work with people to train, to not be so wed to our own ideas, which is a different kind of nimble than the organization being nimble to move from event fundraising to major gift fundraising to from corporate to individual and those channels, which is another world of difficulty.
I'm almost hearing nimble as like a cultural component, you know, having a fundraising culture that makes it okay for one of your frontline folks to come back saying, well, I didn't get this gift, but I got another thing, right? Like making a broader, is that a conversation that you get to have sometimes?
Yes.
With your clients? I mean, how does it go? What happens when you talk about that?
I think it goes with great. As long as the answer, you know, I think it's easy for us to set up our questions to donors as yes or no. And I think we need to make a bigger category of you didn't get it right yet. And look, there are some donors who will keep talking to you for 3 years while you jump through a lot of hoops to try to get it right. And there comes a time when you need to say, I'm never going to get this right for you. I want to believe that you love our mission, but we can't change our mission for you or invent new programs for you to fund because that's not the way we work. So no, I'm not going to have lunch with you again. But that aside, I think it is important to have a culture where you say that's okay to sort of take it to the next. You know, sometimes we walk into a meeting and we think we're asking about corporate marketing dollars. And it turns out we're talking about individual philanthropic dollars from the corporate founder, or vice versa. And so you need a fundraising team that knows how to talk on both sides of that, or knows when to say, let me bring in my partner who really knows about corporate sponsorship opportunities can we call you tomorrow? And that's okay too.
Yeah, there's two really important things I hear you talking about, Amy. It's like, there's the task of fundraising, which is so important. Like, we need this amount of money by this date, and this is what we're after. And then there's also this relationship building where that listening and that intuition really comes in and creating that relationship with the donor to figure out the right way for them to link in, to plug in to the mission. And it's constantly this balance between those, mm-hmm. those two things. And what is, like, what is the balance? What's the perfect balance that you advise people to go for?
I think that as long as you are keeping your eye on the need to close and a good fundraiser, so that's the greatest prize is to get the gift, but the balance is in continuing to work towards the highest and best engagement of that donor. And sometimes that conversation starts, you know, of course, it's about converting an annual donor to a major donor, let's say. And so how are we working towards the higher and best use of that particular donor there? And that comes to the organizational strategy on major donor. I don't know that there's an ideal balance. You know, it comes from understanding it, but I do think it always starts with action. And so as long as you're the fundraiser, the member of your team, or me, or you, whoever is building that relationship, is actually engaging with that donor or prospect and not just reviewing their name on their list, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Amy, I have a totally unrelated question, and I love asking this of people who do consulting and work with, you know, a number of groups at once, which is, you know, what are you seeing? What are some trends? What are some things that you're noticing across multiple organizations that you are in conversation with?
I think what I'm seeing is an increased focus on solving today's bucket of problems. So what do we need? Well, today we need this truck. Today we need to complete this project or build this building. And I think while I appreciate that that's because there are some real current needs that have to happen, the conversation that I keep having is about the value of raising money to go in the biggest bucket possible. And that if you have a donor who wants to fund your mission, that you're better off asking them to fund your mission than asking them to fund the truck. Because the truck is a piece of your mission. You need it to do the work that you're doing. But I keep having, this is a conversation I've had repeatedly, like, unless it's a grant proposal that says we want to fund, you know, give us something focused, and then we want to know where the money was spent dollar for dollar, that while you want to be able to tell stories about the whole world of the mission and all of the work that you do, and that's the first part of this conversation that we had, you also don't want to get into the place where you're, you know, where you're saying, okay, we've funded A, now let's look for B. You want to raise money to put it in the biggest bucket possible, in the most general fund.
Are you thinking it's sort of, I don't know, fundraising anxiety? Is it COVID-based that people feel like they need something specific or granular at this point in time? What do you think is going on behind that?
I think people are looking to, you know, cross things off the list. Here are my tasks. I need, and so we've moved to a place where, you know, everyone has their to-do list. And if the to-do list says, you know, fund the truck, they're focusing on that and a little bit losing sight on the big picture for the small task.
Yeah. What are your biggest worries for the future if you see people just continuing to want to fund the truck?
Well, I think, you know, we run the risk of restricting so much money that the big picture fails. And I mean, I've seen this in a lot of different shapes. It comes in, you know, funding specific scholarships, you know, the donor who wants to fund a scholarship for, you know, a student who meets, you know, a list of 8 criteria, and that we know that 15 years from now, that endowment is going to be very hard to spend because we're not going to be able to find the donor who meets that. And then it comes from foundation funders who want accountability. And so they're asking for very specific restricted grants. I worry a little that a trend towards restricted gifts will mean that organizations are going to feel forced to let their missions shift to meet these new restricted needs. And that sometimes they will lose sight of the big picture.
Yeah, the big picture is so important in the longevity of missions. And so much of what I see in my coaching of nonprofit leaders is people getting lost along the way in the tactics and the tasks and losing track of why they wanted to be part of this work to begin with. And there's always this sort of getting back to what's most important, getting back to the bigger picture, getting back to that bigger bucket that you mentioned of places for the money to go, for things to have that longevity. And I'm hearing you say that it comes from the, you know, finding the right conversations to have with donors in order to make that happen. And to get reconnected with that is so important.
Yeah, I really see sometimes people have this narrative, you know, like that it's, and they may not be 100% wrong, but it's also not necessarily their job. But the narrative is, you know, it's easier to raise money for a program for something really specific, you know, that my donors are only going to understand the value in that rather than a, you know, sort of bigger, less specific ask. And I think people really, they believe deeply, you know, that's going to be easier. That's going to be a better ask.
Yeah. 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 It's so important to know, you know, to know the why. It's like, what's important about this? What's the impact that's needed and wanted here? Where are we heading?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, look, none of this is to say that a restricted gift is bad for the organization or that a restricted ask is wrong. But I think, you know, if the question is, you know, what do I see happening that makes me question, that would be it. But I do want to say, to getting lost in the tactics, I think getting lost in the tactics is bad. But I think that forgetting the tactics or not making sure that your fundraising team is educated and trained in the tactics is a huge problem. And that is actually why Team Cat and Mouse was founded, was because we saw with the extreme rate of turnover among fundraising staff, if we looked to see why that was happening, it was because frontline fundraisers who joined organizations perhaps because of an interest in the broad mission of the organization, those blind fundraisers were not being taught the tactics that would enable them to succeed long term. And so that's where we step in often to take, let's say, a CDO or an executive director who really does know the big picture and give them the support to make it happen by training their fundraisers to actually get out there and
in ways to train fundraisers.
Well, we are big believers in actual sales language and sales training, in helping fundraisers to understand their own skills and their own sales math that goes into it, to understanding your own skills as to whether you're, you know, a hunter, so someone who's going to go out and find new donors, or whether your skill set is better as a farmer or a steward of existing donors, and using those skill sets the best. And in building a team that reflects the importance of having a variety of lines of fundraising. So organizations obviously are built with different sized teams, but, you know, just having the hats on the rack for individual, corporate, foundation, plan giving, and special event fundraising, and knowing how to switch those hats on and off, or put the right one on the right person when it's time to meet with the right
person. I love the metaphor of hats. It's like, it's so simple, yeah. And yet it's so profound in what would be needed differently in those situations. Yeah.
Amy, we love to leave our listeners with something for them to try. And I hear that there's something in there. So, you know, maybe you could either sum it up or give us a new nugget of something for people who are listening to take away.
I guess I'll give you a new nugget, and something for organizations and fundraisers to remember is that there is an endless world of donor prospects. And so if we get caught up in only working with the donors we already knew, or we already know, the ones who are already on our list as donors, we're going to struggle because they are not all going to continue to come out of the funnel. Or as I, perhaps this is informed by my years working only in planned giving, our donors are going to die. And some of them are going to literally die, which is why they're planned giving prospects, and hopefully we've secure a legacy gift from them before that happens. But once it happens, they come off the list. Others are going to more symbolically die. They're going to be dead to us because they are not going to move through the pipeline and become better donors for us, or move from an annual donor to a major gift donor, or they only wanted to come to your event and now you're not having events anymore because of COVID. Or there are other donors to whom we will be dead to them because they found another mission that speaks to them. Or, and we all know these donors, we did something to make them angry and so they're not coming back. And so in order to make sure that your pipeline of donors stays full, you need to keep feeding it with new prospects. And there are lots of ways to do that, but we can't forget that that's also part of our job as fundraisers.
Right.
So keep feeding your pipeline. Yes, good advice.
Keep feeding your pipeline.
Thank you, Amy.
Yes, thank you.
For coming on our podcast. It's been such a pleasure.
Of course, it's been very nice to meet you, Michelle.
So if you're enjoying the show, you can help us to continue to bring thoughtful content with monthly or annual contribution. This supports our production costs and keeps the show ad-free. You can make a contribution today using the link in the show notes. And this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already, and you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. We do have a free resource this week, which is our free Essentials Leadership Guide. No one teaches you how to be a leader. Most nonprofit professionals learn by trial and error, and yet there are a few things that can be learned which will help you avoid many breakdowns and failures. You can find our Essential Leadership Guide on our website at fundraisingleadership.org. Now go put it into practice.